looking unruffled and ready to make a challenge. For all his lack of size, he had no lack of courage. The only thing he really lacked was common sense.
"Don't," Angel pleaded. "Please, Duke, I'll go with you."
"You've become so polite, my dear." Benevolent once more, he smiled at Virgil. "Do you own this piece of land?"
"I do," Virgil said cautiously.
"Would you like to sell it?"
"Not on your life."
Duke laughed.
"No."
"Well, if you need cash to rebuild, come by and we'll talk terms. If you have trouble finding another cook to replace Angel, I might even be able to help you there as well." He looked amused.
"Thanks," Virgil said, but Angel saw he wouldn't take Duke up on anything.
"Mrs. Hosea, you sure about this?"
"Mrs. Hosea," Duke said quietly, one dark brow rising as he looked down at her. Her heart was in her throat.
"Yes, Virgil, I'm sure," she said.
Duke led her away, laughing low as though at some great joke. Angel tried to think what to do, but the firm hand beneath her arm paralyzed her brain.
"Michael, oh, Michael."
He had fought their way out of the saloon in Paradise, but he wouldn't be here to fight for her this time. She was alone, and Duke was holding her so tightly she knew he didn't mean to let her get away again.
"So you married, my dear. Was it entertaining while it lasted, or just pretense?"
He ushered her into a big gaming house. Angel scarcely noticed her surroundings as she walked her between the tables. It was opulent, but then Duke always did everything on a grand scale. Men called greetings to him and openly stared at her in speculation. She walked with her head high, eyes straight ahead. They went up the stairs and down a richly paneled corridor. Panic rose in Angel as she remembered another corridor 3,000 miles away and what had waited for her at the end of it. Duke opened a door and propelled her in ahead of him. A beautiful brunette lay asleep in a rumpled brass bed. Duke walked over and gave her a hard slap. She came awake with a painful cry.
"Get out."
The young prostitute clambered off the bed, snatched up her robe, and fled. Duke smiled at Angel.
"This will be your room."
She couldn't just give in.
"Do I have a choice?"
"Still defiant," he drawled, and came to her slowly.
He gripped her face hard, staring down into her eyes. She tried to hide her fear by glaring back at him, but she couldn't fool him. He obviously knew she was pretending, and smiled.
"You're home, my dear. Right back where you belong. You should be happy."
His hand slid down and closed lightly on her throat.
"You look so in control, but your heart is pounding like a frightened rabbit's."
He lit a cheroot and looked at her through the smoke.
"You're so pale, my dear. Do you think I'm going to hurt you?"
He kissed her forehead in fatherly affection, mocking her as he always had done when she dared to defy him.
"Let's talk later, shall we?"
He patted her cheek as though she were a child and left the room. Michael awakened in a cold sweat. Angel had called to him. He had seen her standing in the midst of a fire, crying out his name over and over again. He couldn't get to her no matter how hard he tried, but he saw a dark figure walking through the flames toward her. He ran shaking hands through his damp hair. Sweat was running down his bare chest, and he couldn't stop shaking. It was just a dream. The foreboding he felt was so heavy he was nauseated. He prayed. Then he rose from the bed and went outside. It would be dawn soon. Things would look better in the light of day. When dawn came, the sensation that something was wrong would not go away, and he prayed again, fervently. He was full of fear for his wife. Where was she? How was she surviving? Was she hungry? Did she have shelter? How was she making her way alone? Why didn't she come back to him? Something ominous hung in the air all day. He could feel it like a blackness covering his soul, and he knew without a doubt it had to do with Amanda. He prayed unceasingly for her. He knew he was helpless. There was nothing he could do if she was in trouble. He didn't know where she was or what kind of help she needed, but letting go of her was so hard. He still loved her so much. He trusted God to protect and guide him. Why couldn't he trust that the Lord would do the same for her? Because he knew she didn't believe. Angel tried the door, but it was locked. She went to the window and pushed the elegant lace curtains aside to look out. No way out there, either. Duke liked to safeguard his property. She paced, palms sweating as she thought of what he might do to her. She wasn't fooled. He was seething with rage beneath his amiable demeanor. Leaving her alone worked in his favor. He knew she would eat herself up with all the thoughts of what he could do. "Not this time," she whispered to herself. "Not again." Looking around, she decided she could make the bed and tidy the room. She could do something to keep her mind off the inevitable. Finishing those small chores, she sat at the window and watched the people milling about below. The fear rose again. Closing her eyes tightly, she wrestled with it. "Michael, Michael, show me what to do." She pictured him working in the fields. She could see him straightening, the hoe in his hand, the smile on his face. She could see him sitting before the fire, the Bible in his lap. "Trust in the Lord," he said. "Trust in the Lord." The door opened, and she forced herself to sit calmly where she was as Duke entered. He was followed by a burly man. She feigned indifference as the servant gathered the other girl's things from the armoire and carried them from the room. Duke stood studying her passively. She looked up at him and smiled faintly. "You won't make me crawl, you devil. You won't turn my mind inside out this time. I'll think of Michael. I'll just keep thinking of Michael." A Chinese servant came in to strip the bed and put on fresh linens. Angel sat sedately in the high-back chair, her hands resting lightly on the arms, her heart beating violently. Duke had not moved or said anything, but she knew that look, and fear grew like a knot in her belly. What retribution was he planning? "Bring the tub up," he ordered, and the Chinese man bowed. "Make sure she has plenty of warm water." The celestial bowed again and backed out of the room. Duke's eyes narrowed as he studied her face for a long moment. "I'll send someone to attend you." He turned and left. Surprised, she let out her breath. He had been disturbed by her manner. She had never been able to fool him before, but then it had been almost 3 years since she had last seen him. Perhaps he had forgotten her ruse. And perhaps that would only make matters worse. A young girl came in to help her undress. She was no more than 13. Angel knew she wasn't Duke's mistress, though she might very well have been at one time. She was pretty enough. But Angel knew that as long as a girl was Duke's exclusively, her face was clean, she wore pastels, braids, and hair ribbons. This girl's cheeks and lips were reddened, and her hair was spilling in a curly mass over thin shoulders. She had that look of having come through hell. Full of pity, she smiled at the young girl. "What's your name?" "Cherry," the girl said, dumping Angel's gingham dress and underthings beside the door. "I'd like to have those things back once they're washed. Duke said to throw them away." "And one must always obey Duke." She didn't want to get the girl in trouble. "Did he bring you to California with him?" "Me and three other girls," she said as she tested the water. It's not too hot. You can bathe now. Angel removed her worn underclothing. Lowering herself into the warm water, she sighed. Whatever happened, she would be clean when it came. On the outside, at least. How long have you been here?
8 months, the girl answered.
Angel frowned. She had been living within blocks of Duke all this time and never knew it. Maybe it was fate that she be with him.
You're very beautiful, Cherry said.
Angel looked at the girl bleakly. So are you. Such a pale, pretty girl with frightened blue eyes. She was filled with compassion.
Would you like me to wash your hair for you? Cherry said.
What I would like is to find a way out of here. Cherry froze in surprise, and Angel smiled in self-mockery. But then, that's impossible, isn't it? She took the sponge and bar of lavender-scented soap from the girl and said nothing more. Duke came in without knocking. Cherry jumped, her face paling. Angel put her hand on the girl's and felt how cold she was. Several satin gowns were draped over Duke's arm, and he laid them with great ceremony on the end of the bed. Leave us, Cherry. The girl scurried out of the room. Angry, Angel steeled all her defenses and continued with her bath as though he weren't there. He was staring at her. Uncomfortable beneath that dark scrutiny, she rose and wrapped a large towel around herself. He handed her another smaller one for her hair. She wrapped it about her head like a turban. He held a blue satin dressing gown open for her. Donning it, she tied it snugly. He put his hand on her shoulder, turning her toward him. You're no longer my little angel, are you? I couldn't stay a child forever, she said, chilled by his touch. A pity. He held a chair out for her. Breathing slowly, she forced herself to remain calm as she sat. You must be famished, he said, and pulled the bell cord. The Chinese servant entered with a tray. As soon as it was placed on the table before her, Duke waved him out. Removing the silver covers himself, he smiled. All your favorites, my dear. It was a feast. A thick, rare beefsteak, creamed potatoes, and mixed vegetables dripping with butter. There was even a thick slice of chocolate cake. She hadn't eaten a meal like this since leaving the New York brothel. Her mouth watered, and her stomach tightened. Duke lifted a silver pitcher, filled a crystal glass with milk, and handed it to her. You always did prefer it to champagne, didn't you? She took the glass from him. Fattening the calf before you slaughter it, Duke. The golden calf? Now wouldn't I be a fool to do so? She hadn't eaten since before the fire, stubbornly refusing the charity offered by that priest. Eat his soup, and he would expect her to confess her soul before he told her it was beyond redemption. So she was starving now. I'll join you later, Duke said, surprising her again. She had expected him to stay. As soon as he was out the door, she tucked into the sumptuous meal. She hadn't tasted food this good in 3 years. Duke had always set a good table. She poured herself a second glass of milk. Only when her stomach was full did she realize what she had done, and shame filled her. Oh, Michael, I'm weak. I'm so weak. I was right to leave you. Look at me. Stuffing myself on Duke's food. I'm selling my soul for a steak and a slice of chocolate cake, when I swore I'd starve before I went back to my old ways. I don't know how to be good. I could only manage it when I was with you. You look distraught, my dear. What is it? Something you ate? Duke's voice startled her. She hadn't even heard him come back into the room. Or are you worried what my punishment will be? She pushed the empty plate away, her face flaming with humiliation, sick at what she had done. I don't care what you do, she said in a flat voice. She got up and turned her back on him. Pushing the lace curtains back from the window, she looked down at the busy city street. What's happened to all the fine moral strength I possessed while I was with you, Michael? It's gone again. I'm right back to being Angel, all in the space of a few short hours and one tray of supper. She closed her eyes. God, if you are there, strike me dead. Kill me so I won't give in completely. I haven't the strength to fight this devil. I haven't any strength at all.
I worried about you, Duke said in a cajoling tone. She felt his hands on her shoulders, his thumbs kneading her tight muscles. I've only your best interest at heart.
Just as always, she said dryly.
Did you ever have to deal with the lower classes, my dear? You only had the best. How many 16-year-old girls have had a senator and Supreme Court justice visiting them on a regular basis? Or a shipping magnate? Charles was quite devastated when you disappeared. He hired his own contacts to search for you. It was he who told me you were on a ship to California.
Good old Charles, she said, remembering the spoiled young man. Shrugging Duke's hands off of her, she faced him. What if I told you I wanted out? His mouth lifted slightly.
Tell me about this man, Hosea.
Her muscles tensed. Why do you want to know about him?
Just curious, my dear.
Maybe talking of Michael would give her the strength to resist whatever came. He's a farmer.
A farmer? Duke said, surprised and amused again. And did you learn to plow, Angel? Can you milk a cow and sew a fine seam? Did you enjoy having dirt under your fingernails?
He took her hand, turning it palm up. She remained passive.
Calluses, he said in disgust, and let her go.
Yes, calluses, she said proudly. Even covered with dirt and sweat, I was cleaner with him than I've ever been with you. He slapped her, and she reeled back. Straightening, she saw something in his face that made her less afraid. She wasn't sure what it was, but he didn't look so in command of himself or the situation.
Tell me all, my dear.
She did.
Did you love him?
I still love him. I'll always love him. He's the only good thing that's ever happened to me in my life, and I'll cling to that until I die.
His face darkened. Are you in a hurry for that to happen?
Do what you will, Duke. Do what you please. Haven't you always? She turned away from him again, half expecting him to swing her around and hit her, but he didn't. She sat down on the edge of the bed and looked up at him curiously.
So where is this paragon of virtue and manhood now? Duke asked.
On his farm. Perhaps he had turned to Miriam by now.
You left him?
Yes, I left him.
He smiled, satisfied. Bored?
No. One of Michael's dreams was to have children, and as we both know, I can't have them.
She couldn't keep the bitterness from her voice, nor did she try. So you haven't forgiven me for that yet?
I told Michael I couldn't have children, and why? He said it made no difference to him.
No?
No, but it made a difference to me. I wanted him to have all he deserved and wanted.
Duke's face hardened more with each word she spoke. She ignored the warning. She was thinking only of Michael.
It wasn't the first time I left him. I married him when I couldn't do anything else, and I left the first chance I got. I wanted no part of him. I wanted to go back and get the money that was owed me. By the time I got there, the brothel was gone. It had burned down, and the madam was gone. So I ended up working for a saloon keeper. I got a good taste there of all those lower classes you talk about with such disparagement. You know what Michael did when he found out where I was? He came and got me out. He fought our way out, and he took me home again. He forgave me.
She laughed bleakly.
but I kept running away. He made me feel things, amazing things. It was as though he was turning my whole life inside out, loving me, always loving me, no matter what he learned about my past, no matter what I did, no matter how much I hurt him. He wouldn't give up on me.
Duke gripped her chin. Just as I haven't. His eyes burned like coals. Or have you forgotten you ran away from me, too, several times, and I always brought you home and forgave you? She jerked her chin away and glared up at him. Forgave me? You owned me. You see me as a possession. Something to be sold to the highest bidder. Something to be used. Michael loved me. You always thought you owned my soul. Michael showed me no one does. No. He gently touched the cheek he had struck. Don't you feel right at home here, Angel? Haven't you missed the good food, the beautiful clothes, the lavish setting, the attention? She shifted uneasily and saw him smile. I know you, he said. For all you protest, you love the feel of silk against your skin. You enjoy having a personal maid to attend you. He picked up the empty pitcher from the table. You love milk. He laughed at her. Angel's face was aflame. His expression was filled with malicious delight as he pressed her. I used to watch the way you played the men who came to you. Clay in your hands. They were besotted with you.
And that gave you power over them.
Yes, it did, he readily admitted. Great power. He tipped her face up roughly. I have missed you. I have missed the power you gave me because the men I brought to you fell under your spell, and when they did, they belonged to me.
You give me too much credit.
No one could ever touch you.
Michael did.
She saw the flash of rage in his dark eyes. Oddly, she wasn't afraid.
There was a stillness inside her. Just thinking about Michael gave her courage, but she knew it wasn't a courage that would last. Not once Duke got started. He wasn't like McGowan. He wouldn't lose control, and he would never kill her.
Duke rose. I'll leave you for now, my dear. Rest. I'll be back to talk with you again. We have business to discuss. After all, you must earn your keep.
When he leaned down to kiss her, she turned her face away. His hard fingers clamped on her cheeks like a vise, forcing her head up. He kissed her hard. She felt no passion in him, nor did she see it when he drew back. He had tired of her in that way when she was a little older than Cherry.
Duke paused at the door. By the way, Angel, if your Michael comes for you, I will kill him the same way I killed Johnny. He smiled slightly. And I'm going to make you watch.
Her courage withered. He saw and smiled again. Angel heard the key turn in the lock and sank down onto the bed. Duke didn't come back the next day or the day after that. Cherry brought her food, and a guard made sure the door was locked when the girl left. Angel knew what Duke was doing, but knowing didn't help. Her nightmares returned. She was running. Night closing around her. Heavy footsteps echoed in the alley behind her. Before her were the docks, ships' masts filling the horizon. She ran from one to another, pleading that they would let her come aboard.
Sorry, ma'am, all filled up, the sailor said, one after another.
She ran down the last pier and saw below her a garbage scow. The ropes were being untied. Looking back, she saw Duke. He was calling to her, his dark voice pulling at her. Rats crawled over the refuse in the scow below her, feasting on rotting meat and vegetables. The foul smell assaulted her senses, but she jumped anyway and landed hard. Her hands sank into an oozing mass as rats squealed and scurried in all directions. She almost fainted from the foul stench, but clung tightly as the scow began to move. It pulled away from the dock just as Duke reached the end.
You can't get away. You can't get away, Angel.
Then he was gone, and she was in the middle of a storm-tossed sea. Waves crashed around her, splashing over the sides of the scow. She tried to climb to a safer haven, but there was none. She pulled herself higher to get away from the cold spray. When she reached the top, she saw Rab lying on his back. The black cord was still around his neck, and rats were tearing away his dead flesh. Crying out in fear, she slid down the heap again, huddling in the farthest corner of the scow, away from him. Shivering with cold, she covered her head. "I wish I was dead. I wish I was dead."
"Darling, where is it?"
Angel looked up and saw her mother standing before her, shimmering in white.
"Where is it, darling? Where's my rosary?"
Angel scrambled over the heap, searching frantically.
"I'll find it, Mama. I'll find it."
She saw something glimmer brightly and reached for it.
"It's here. Oh, it's here, Mama."
The scow lurched violently and rose at one end, dumping garbage into the sea. Angel cried out, trying to reach her mother's rosary as she tumbled. Her fingertips just brushed the crucifix and beads before it slipped away, spilling over the side into the turbulent sea. Angel felt herself slipping away as well. Instinctively, she grasped hold of something. But nothing was solid enough to hold her safe. Everything was going. She splashed into the cold water, decaying debris churning around her. She kicked and fought to make the surface, and when she did, it was calm. She saw a shore and swam toward it. When she reached it, she could hardly stand under the weight of the filth clinging to her. She staggered onto the beach and sank down, exhausted. Her skin was blotched with ugly sores and disgusting growths, like the baby of the young prostitute. When she looked up, she saw Michael standing in a field. The soft wind made the wheat look like a golden sea around him. The air was sweet and clean. Miriam was walking toward him, a baby in her arms, but he paid her no attention.
"Amanda," he called out, running toward her. "No, Michael, go back. Don't come near me."
She knew if he touched her, the foulness covering her would cover him as well.
"Stay away. Stay back."
But he would not listen. He came ahead. She was too weak to run away. She looked down at herself and saw her flesh decaying and dropping away. Michael walked toward her without hesitation. He was so close, she could see his eyes.
"Oh, God, let me die. Let me die for him."
"No," came a soft voice. She looked up and saw Michael standing before her. A small flame burned where his heart was. "No, beloved." His mouth hadn't moved, and the voice was not his. The flame grew larger and brighter, spreading until his entire body was radiant with it. Then the light separated from Michael and came the last few feet toward her. It was a man, glorious and magnificent, light streaming from him in all directions.
"Who are you?" she whispered, terrified. "Who are you?"
"Yahweh, El Shaddai, Jehovah Mekodeshkem, El Elyon, El Olam, Elohim."
The names kept coming, moving together like music, rushing through her blood, filling her. She trembled in fear and could not move. He reached out and touched her, and she felt warmth encompassing her and the fear dissolving away. She looked down at herself and found she was clean and clothed in white.
"Then I am dead."
"That you may live."
Blinking, she looked up again and saw the man of light covered with her filth.
"No," she wept. "Oh, God, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'll take it back. I'll do anything."
Yet even as she reached out, the defilement disappeared, and he stood before her, perfect again.
"I am the way, Sarah. Follow me."
As she stepped forward and reached out for him, there was a thunderclap, and Angel awakened in darkness. She lay still, staring upward, her heart racing. She closed her eyes tightly, wanting to go back to the dream, wanting to see it finished, but she couldn't grasp it. She could scarcely remember it now. It eluded her. Then she heard the sound that had disturbed her sleep. It came from the next room and was so familiar it tore into her heart. Duke was speaking in low, seductive tones, and a child was crying. Chapter 31. From Isaiah, chapter 43, verse 1. But now, thus says the Lord, your Creator, O Jacob, and He who formed you, O Israel. Do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. Paul knew he had to go back to the mountains. He couldn't stay on this land another week. He couldn't stay this close to Miriam and not go crazy. Better the disillusionment and drudgery of gold panning than seeing her walking across the field toward Michael's cabin. But he needed money to buy supplies. Swallowing his pride, he went to Michael and tried to sell his land. I'm not asking much for it, just enough to set me up. It's good land. It should be yours anyway, Michael. You held on to it for me when I went away the last time. I'm land poor, Michael said, and refused the offer. Wait until your spring crops are ready for harvest. Then take what you earn and go if you have to. The land will be waiting when you come back. I'm not coming back, Michael. Not this time. Michael put his hand on Paul's arm. Why do you torture yourself? Why do you drive yourself before any wind that blows? Paul tore loose, angry. Why do you wait for a harlot who's never coming back? He left before he said more to regret. He had no choice now but to go to John Altman. John invited him into the cabin. Elizabeth was rocking the baby, and Miriam was bending over the fire, stirring a bubbling stew. The sight of her made his pulse jump. She straightened and smiled at him, and his knees felt weak. "Sit down, Paul," John said, slapping him on the back. "We haven't seen you in a while." Paul found his gaze drifting to Miriam again. He lost track of what John was saying as he watched her roll out biscuit dough, cut it, and place the pieces in a cast-iron pan. John's silence drew his attention again. Elizabeth was smiling at him. So was John. He could feel the heat rising in his face. "I came to offer you my land, John." Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Miriam straighten and look at him. A muscle jerked in his jaw. "I've decided to go back to the mountains," he said with finality. John's brows flickered. Elizabeth frowned. "This is rather sudden, isn't it, Paul?" "No." He could feel Miriam staring at him now, hands on her hips. "Have you thought about what you're doing?" John asked. "You've put a lot of work into that land." "I've thought about it. I guess I'm just not cut out to be a farmer." Miriam turned her back and slammed a lid down on the pan. Elizabeth and John jumped and glanced at her in surprise. "I'm not asking much for it," Paul said, trying to ignore her. He named his price, further shocking them. "It's worth far more than that," John said. He rubbed his chin, troubled by the offer. "Why are you doing this?" Miriam swung around. "Because he's a fool." "Miriam," Elizabeth said, stunned. "I beg your pardon, Mama. He's an idiot, a dunderhead, a blockhead, a dunce." "That will be enough," John said, rising from his chair, his face darkening with outrage. "Paul is a guest in our home." Miriam just looked at Paul, her eyes blazing as tears ran down her pale cheeks. "I'm sorry, Papa. I guess I forgot my place. Excuse me." She hurried across the room, snatched down her shawl, and opened the door. She looked back at Paul.
Go ahead. Run away to your mountains and your gold panning.
She slammed the door behind her. Paul sat motionless, shattered. He wanted to go after her and explain. But what could he say? That he was in love with her, and it was driving him mad? That Michael would get over Angel, and she would be wise to wait?
John sat down again.
I apologize, he said. I don't know what's gotten into her.
I'm sure she didn't mean it, Paul, Elizabeth said.
It would be better if she did.
What do you say, John? Do you want the place or shall I go into town and see if anyone's interested?
The sooner he got out of here, the better.
Frowning, John looked at his wife.
Let me think about it. I'll let you know by the end of the week.
3 more days. Could he stand 3 more days?
Thanks. Paul rose.
Don't make yourself so scarce, John said, putting his hand on Paul's shoulder as they walked to the door. And whatever happens, you'll always be welcome here.
He walked him outside.
Whatever's bothering Miriam, she'll get over it.
Paul saw her walking across the field, heading in the direction of Michael's place.
I reckon she will.
He smiled bleakly.
I'll talk to you in a few days, John.
He put on his hat and headed for home.
What do you make of that? John asked Elizabeth when he came back inside.
John, I haven't been able to make sense of anything since Amanda left.
They waited for Miriam to come home, hoping that she would finally confide in them as she used to. It was after dark when she came in the door.
We were worried, Elizabeth said in reprimand. They hadn't expected her to be gone so long.
Where have you been? John demanded.
I went to Michael's. Then I walked. Then I sat. And then I prayed.
Miriam hunched over and began to sob. John and Elizabeth looked at one another in surprise. Though their daughter was tender-hearted, she wasn't given to such outbursts of emotion.
What is it, darling? Elizabeth asked, putting her arm around her. What's wrong?
Oh, Mama, I love him so much it hurts.
Elizabeth looked at her husband. But he's married. You know that.
Miriam reared up, face red.
Paul, Mama, not Michael.
Paul, Elizabeth said, greatly relieved. But we thought, it's always been Paul, and I know he loves me too. He's just too stubborn to admit it, even to himself.
She looked at her father.
I can't let him leave, Papa. If you buy his land, I'll never forgive you.
If I don't, someone else will.
He tried to make sense of what was happening. If he loves you, why would he be selling his land so he can leave?
I think he might be going for the same reasons Amanda left Michael.
You never did tell us what she said to you, Elizabeth reminded her.
Miriam blushed.
I can't. She sank down into the chair and covered her face. I just can't.
Elizabeth knelt down beside her and tried to comfort her.
How do you propose to stop Paul from leaving? Her father asked. He's made up his mind, Miriam, and that's the way it is.
Miriam looked up. I could make him change his mind.
Studying his daughter's determined face, John frowned.
Just what did you have in mind?
Miriam bit her lip and looked between her mother and father.
Something from the Bible.
She wiped the tears away and sat straighter.
What part of the Bible? Her father asked sternly.
I know what it'll take, Papa, but you're going to have to trust me.
How old is she, Duke?
His mouth curved mockingly. Jealous, Angel?
She wanted to kill him.
8? 9? She can't be much older than that, or she couldn't arouse your interest.
His expression became dangerous. You do well to curb your nasty little tongue, my dear.
He held out a chair for her. Sit down. We have things to discuss.
Angel was dressed in a pink satin and lace confection. Though the gown fit her slender body perfectly, Angel hated it. She hated having every curve revealed to Duke's perusal. He was checking out the merchandise, deciding how to display it to the best advantage.
"Pink no longer suits you," he said, dismaying her that their thoughts could be so alike. "Red, I think, or deep sapphire blue, even emerald green. You will look like a goddess in those colors."
He touched her bare shoulder before he took his own seat. She faced him across the small table, schooling her face to show nothing. He studied her with a tight smile.
"You've changed, Angel. You were always headstrong and aloof. It was part of your charm. But now you are careless as well. It's not a wise thing to be in your position."
"Perhaps I don't care what happens to me anymore."
"Do you wish me to prove you wrong? I could, you know, very easily."
He tapped his fingertips together. She stared at those aristocratic hands, hands without calluses, pale and manicured. Beautifully shaped hands that were capable of unspeakable cruelty. She remembered Michael's hands, large and strong, clearly used to hard labor. They were calloused and rough. His hands had looked so cruel and yet been so gentle. His touch had healed her body and opened her heart. Duke's eyes narrowed coldly.
"Why are you smiling like that?"
"Because nothing you do to me really matters."
"Did your Michael tell you that? You've been away from me too long."
All those horrible nightmares, the secrets and guilt she had carried. Michael had said once she would have to throw away all her old baggage. That's what Duke was, old baggage. "Oh, no, Duke, I carried you with me wherever I went." She saw his smug smile and added, "What a waste of precious time." His mouth pressed into a hard line.
"I'm going to give you a choice, my dear. You can manage the girls or become one of them."
"Take Sally's place, you mean? Whatever happened to her, Duke? I never saw her again after you moved me uptown."
"She's still in New York, making out very well for herself at the Brownstone. She's still quite beautiful. Too lush for my tastes, of course."
"Poor Sally. She's loved you for years. Or did you never know?"
"I suppose you did. You just didn't care one way or the other. She's too old for you, isn't she, Duke? Too much of a woman."
Duke came out of his chair. Grabbing her hair, he yanked her head back, and his face came down within inches of her own.
"What's happened to you, my dear?" he said in a deceptively soft voice. "What will it take to bring my little angel back?"
Her scalp was on fire, her heart in her throat. He could break her neck in an instant if he chose to. She wished he would, and put an end to all of it. His dark eyes changed as he glared into hers. Frowning slightly, he eased his grip.
"You're no good to me, dead."
Could he read her mind so easily? He let go of her with a hard jerk and stepped away. He crossed the room, then looked back at her warily.
"Don't push me, Angel. As fond as I am of you, you are not indispensable."
Angel thought of the child. "Who is manager of the keys now?" She smoothed her skirt so he wouldn't see how badly frightened she was or what her reasons for asking were. He was perplexed. That was far preferable to sadistic.
"I am."
He pushed his hands into his pants and pulled out a ring of keys. "I think I would prefer Sally's position." If she could discover which key belonged to the girl's door, perhaps she could get her out of this hellhole. Duke was smiling, eyes laughing at her. He tossed the keys onto the table before her.
"The wine cellar, pantry, linen cabinets, and costume room."
He opened his collar and slipped out a gold chain. A key was on it.
This is the one you want.
Still smiling, he came to her again and rested his hands heavily on her shoulders.
I think you do need a lesson after all, he said silkily. I'm going to introduce you this evening. You're going to wear a blue gown and leave your glorious hair down. You will be a great sensation. Every girl I have is lovely, but you are something very rare and special. Every man in the house will want you.
Angel's skin grew colder and colder as he spoke. She wanted to bolt from the chair, but knew, even if she did so, she would succeed in nothing. It was wiser to sit still and wait.
You will be the keeper of the keys next week, my dear, but for this one week you will serve our patrons yourself. I have several in mind that will prove useful to me. He smiled. Besides, I've kept you far too exclusive. You need a little awakening as to how well you have had it.
When he stepped away, she looked up at his face and saw he meant every word he said. Paul awakened to find Miriam stirring the coals and adding wood to his fire. The blanket slid down his bare chest as he sat bolt upright and stared at her. He was dreaming. He must be. Rubbing his face, he looked around and saw her shawl across the back of his chair and a case on the table. She turned toward him and smiled. Good morning. It's almost light.
She was real, all right. Panic set in. What are you doing here?
I'm moving in with you.
What?
I said I'm moving in with you.
He stared at her as though she had gone out of her mind. She came and sat on the edge of his bed. He pulled the blanket up to cover his bare chest. Miriam watched Paul, and she couldn't help but laugh at the absurdity of the situation. It was his own fault, if he weren't so stubborn.
This isn't the least bit funny, he said through his teeth.
No, it isn't, she agreed more solemnly.
I love you. And I'm not going to let you go off to the mountains and ruin your life.
He looked endearingly confused. His hair was poking up in all directions, like a little boy's. She reached out to smooth it down, and he drew back, his eyes filled with alarm.
Go home, Miriam, he said, desperate. He had to get her out of there. Did she know what it did to him to have her say she loved him? If she didn't leave now, he didn't think he would be able to resist her. But she didn't move. She just sat looking at him with a patient smile. He heard a roaring in his ears and bellowed, I said, go home!
No, she said simply. And I'm not giving you your clothes, either.
His lips parted. She folded her hands and placed them demurely in her lap, then smiled at him. The look in her eyes made him hot all over. He could barely get his breath. This was insanity.
What are you playing at, Miriam Altman? What's your father going to say about this?
He already knows.
Oh, God, he prayed aloud, wondering when John was going to burst in the door with a shotgun in his hand.
Papa spent most of last night trying to talk me out of this, and finally gave up. I would have been here sooner otherwise.
Her smile hinted at mischief.
Do you remember the Book of Ruth, Paul, in the Bible? Do you remember what she did? Well, Boaz, here I am at your very feet. Now what are you going to do about it?
She put her hand on his thigh, and he jumped a foot.
Don't touch me, he said, beads of sweat breaking out on his forehead. I'm telling you, I want you out of here right now.
No, you don't.
How do you know what I want?
He tried to sound angry.
I know every time you look at me. You want me.
Don't do this, he pleaded.
Paul, she said very gently, I love Michael very much. He's like an older brother to me. But I'm not in love with him and never will be. I'm in love with you.
You don't belong with me, he said, anguished.
Don't be ridiculous, she said, as though speaking to a recalcitrant child. Of course I do.
Miriam,
She put her hand against his bare shoulder, and he drew in his breath at her touch.
"I've always wanted to touch you," she said, her voice soft and husky. "That day in the field when you were plowing."
He swallowed hard and caught her hand. Her eyes met his.
"And I've always wanted you to touch me."
"Miriam," he said hoarsely, "I'm not a saint."
"I know that. Do you think I am?"
Her eyes were shimmery with tears.
"This isn't easy, you know. But I am a woman, Paul, not a child, and I know what I want. I want you, as my husband, to live with for all our days."
He was shaking. "Don't do this to me." He watched a tear slide down her cheek and couldn't help himself. He reached out to brush it away. She put her hands over his, trapping it there against her cheek, but only briefly. Her skin was so soft, her hair silky. His thumb slid down, feeling the wild pulse in her throat.
"Miriam. Oh, Miriam, what are you trying to do to me?"
"Nothing you haven't wanted for a long time. Admit it." Her arm slid around his neck, and she kissed him. When she raised her mouth from his, he couldn't have stopped for the world. He framed her face with his hands and kissed her, gently at first, then with all the pent-up love he'd been feeling for months. He kissed her as the starving man he was. Her surrender to him made his senses swim. She was firm and smooth and warm, and she tasted like heaven.
"I love you," he whispered, almost afraid to say the words aloud. "I've been going mad. I couldn't stand it. I had to get away from you."
"I know," she said, trembling, her hands in his hair. She started to weep.
"I love you so much. Oh, Paul, I do."
He drew back, looking down into her face, noting how her cheeks were flushed, her eyes filled with her love for him, and he thought his heart would burst. She was his. She belonged to him. He could scarcely take it in. She saw the look burning in his eyes and reached up to touch his cheek, her face softening with tenderness.
"I want us to begin right. Marry me first, Paul. Be my husband. I want to share everything with you without any shadows over us, without any regrets. If you make love to me now, you'll be ashamed tomorrow. You know you will. You won't be able to face my father and mother. You'll think you took advantage of me."
She smiled tremulously. "Even though it's the other way around."
"I thought I could leave you," he said, knowing he would have carried her with him the rest of his life, a torment he would never escape.
"I guess we'll have to ride up to Sacramento and see if we can find a preacher."
"No, we don't."
He looked at her, surprised. Blushing, she smiled shyly, more the Miriam he knew, and not the bold young woman who had stolen into his cabin at night. "Papa said he would marry us himself. He was going through the trunk when I left, looking for his Book of Common Prayer. He was rather in a hurry, I think." He kissed her again, unable to help himself.
"I never had a chance, did I?" he said, laughing softly.
"No, you didn't." She smiled, content. "Michael always said you'd come around. I just got so tired of waiting." From where she stood behind the curtain to the left of the stage, Angel could hear the men who jammed the casino. The place was a circus, and Duke was going to put her right in the center ring. He had already given them a show of dancing girls, jugglers, and acrobats. Where he had found such people, Angel couldn't even guess, but Duke had his ways and means. Perhaps he had waved his hand and produced them from the fire and smoke. She moved restlessly, and the hand beneath her arm tightened. She hadn't been without a guard since Duke had put her in the upstairs room. There was no escape, and she was sick with dread and fear. Closing her eyes, Angel fought down the nausea. Maybe she shouldn't. Maybe she should go out center stage and vomit. That would dampen the ardor Duke was inciting in the crowd.
She almost laughed, but she knew if she did, she would give in completely to hysteria. She could hear him, working his audience. He had an orator's voice. It had served him well in politics, and afterward, when he decided working behind the scenes was more lucrative. He was putting a fire beneath the waiting men, rousing them. She could almost smell their lust. In a few minutes, she would face it. Hundreds of pairs of eyes staring at her, taking off her clothes, imagining whatever they wanted to do to her. And Duke would let them make those imaginings real, for a price. Anything for a high enough price. For a week, you'll serve them. Angel closed her eyes. God, if you're there, kill me, please. Send a lightning bolt and wipe me off the face of the earth. Send me into oblivion. Send fire. Turn me into a pillar of salt. Any way you want to do it. Only do it. Please, God, help me. Help me.
Easy, little lady, the man said, smiling down at her coldly.
Oh, God. Oh, Jesus, please help me.
He's almost got them ready for you.
Then, just when she thought her heart would stop for the terror, she heard it. Sarah, beloved. It was the same soft voice she had heard in Michael's cabin, the one she'd heard in her dream. Be still, for I am here. She looked around, but only her guard and the performers were there. Her heart was racing madly, and her skin rose with goosebumps as it had that strange night in the cabin.
Where? Where? She whispered frantically.
The guard looked down at her questioningly.
What's the matter?
Did you hear someone speaking?
With all that racket out there?
He laughed. She was shaking violently.
Are you sure?
His hand tightened, giving her a hard jerk.
You better get yourself together. Pretending you're crazy isn't going to do you any good. Duke's just about ready for you to come out. Listen to those men. Sound like hungry lions, don't they?
Angel was ready to dig in her heels, but what was the use? She closed her eyes tightly again, trying to block out the maddening crowd sitting in front of the stage, trying to focus on the frightening, quiet voice in her head that called her by a name she had heard only once in a dream since her mother died.
What do you want me to do? Tell me. Oh, God, tell me.
My will. Despair filled her. She didn't know what that was.
There's your signal, her guard said. Are you going to walk on your own?
Even if she were able to get away, where could she run? She opened her eyes, and suddenly the shaking inside her stopped. She couldn't explain it, but she felt calm, unnaturally so. She gave the guard an imperious look. If you let go of my arm, she said. He blinked, surprised, and let go of her. She stepped forward, and he held the curtain aside so she could walk out. As soon as she appeared, the place went wild. Men whistled and catcalled. She kept her head up, her eyes straight ahead, and walked to the center stage where Duke stood smiling at her with malicious delight. He leaned close, his mouth near her ear, so she could hear him above the din. Feel the power, Angel. You can share it with me. We can bring them to their knees. Then he left her standing in center stage alone. The noise was deafening. Were they all mad? She wanted to run and hide. She wanted to die. Look at them. She forced herself to display the old arrogance and disdain as her gaze swept the crowded room. Look into their eyes, Sarah. She did, the men closest to the stage at first, then sweeping outward. They were young. There was a hollow, haunting look in their eyes. She recognized that look. Disillusionment and broken dreams, defiance. Hadn't she felt the same loneliness and desperation she saw reflected all around her? She looked at the men standing near the faro tables, staring up at her. She looked at the men lining the mahogany bar, glasses of whiskey in their hands. Was it her imagination, or was the noise quieting?
"Sing us something," a man called from the back.
Others yelled their agreement. Her mind went blank except for one song, totally inappropriate, utterly out of place.
"Sing, Angel."
The noise rose again like a tidal wave, and the piano player pounded out a bawdy tune the men recognized. Some took up the tune themselves, singing raucously, laughing with abandon.
"Sing, beloved."
She closed her eyes to shut the men out and started to sing. Not the song being played, but another song, one from long ago. And as she sang, she stood again at the well with Michael and Miriam, bending over the side, singing down into it, the harmony and music rising up to envelop her. She imagined Michael and Miriam on either side of her. She could almost hear Miriam's warm laughter.
"Louder, silly! What are you afraid of? You can sing. Of course you can sing."
And then Michael's voice echoed, "Louder, Tirza. Sing as though you believe it." "But I don't believe. I'm afraid to believe." She stopped abruptly and opened her eyes, her mind suddenly blank. The words to the song were gone, vanished. The place was silent, every man staring up at her where she stood, alone on the empty stage. She could feel the burn of tears behind her eyes. "Oh God, make me believe." Someone began singing for her, picking up the words where she had left off. His voice was rich and deep, so like Michael's, her heart jumped. She searched for him and saw him near the bar, a tall, gray-haired man in a dark business suit. As suddenly as they'd disappeared, the words came back to her, and she sang with him as he continued. He walked slowly through the parting crowd. He stopped below the stage and smiled up at her. She smiled back. Then she looked around at the men again, all silent now, stunned. Some couldn't meet her eyes, but they looked away, ashamed. "Why are you all here?" she cried out, the tears so close she was afraid they would choke her. "Why aren't you home with your wives and children or your mothers and sisters? Don't you know what this place is? Don't you know where you are?" The curtains swished open behind her, and the dancing girls came racing out. The piano player began again, and the young women began singing loudly around her, kicking their bare legs up high. Some of the men began to clap and cheer. Others just stood there, silent, ashamed. Angel walked slowly off the stage. She saw Duke waiting for her, a look in his eyes that she had never seen before. Perspiration beaded his brow, and his face was pale with fury. He grabbed her arm brutally and yanked her into the shadows. "What made you do a stupid thing like that?"
"God, I think," she said, stunned. She felt jubilation and the presence of a power so immense she was trembling. She looked up at Duke and wasn't afraid of him anymore.
"God?" He spat the word out. His eyes blazed. "I'm going to kill you. I should have killed you a long time ago."
"You're afraid, aren't you? I can smell it. You're afraid of something you can't even see, and do you know why? Because what Michael has is more powerful than you ever were, ever could be."
He raised his hand to strike her, and a man spoke quietly from behind him.
"You touch that young woman, and I will see you hang."
Duke swung around. The man who had sung with her was standing a few feet away. He was slightly shorter than Duke and much leaner, but there was something about him that gave him an aura of strength and authority. She looked up at Duke to see if he felt it too, and saw he did indeed. Her heart began beating wildly. "Would you like to